From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. As the second week of public hearings in the House-led impeachment inquiry continues, numerous witnesses painted a picture of how President Donald Trump aimed to use U.S. military aid to Ukraine in order to try to extract political dirt on his election rivals. On Tuesday morning, Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman and the vice presidential aide Jennifer Williams testified before House committees as two of nine people speaking publicly this week. Vindman in particular has emerged as a credible witness who is a decorated and active duty member of the U.S. military. But like others who are publicly warning against the president's conduct, he's being smeared as motivated by partisan concerns. On Wednesday, Trump loyalist Gordon Sondland will testify. Sondland is a critical figure and revised his testimony in closed-door depositions. As the impeachment drama unfolds, Democrats are considering whether to investigate if Trump lied to former special counsel Robert Mueller in his written testimony during that separate investigation. My guest is Marjorie Cohn, professor emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She's a writer for Truthout, and she's been closely following the story. Welcome to the program, Marjorie.
Thanks for having me, Sonali.
So Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Vindman strikes me as having that same level of credibility as former U.S. Ambassador to Ukraine Marie Yovanovitch had in her public testimony last week, somebody who really is taking a big risk personally to speak out and who seems motivated really quite by principle than by any partisan concerns. How do you view his testimony, which so far has emerged as the most strong one this week?
Yes, well, I think that Vindman, you're right, very credible. He's there in his full dress uniform with his Purple Heart, and he was in Iraq. He served his country. And even though the Republicans on the committee tried to tarnish him, he rose above it and was, I think, very believable and had a lot of integrity. They tried to paint him as someone who went, well, he was a witness to the July 25th phone call, the infamous phone call in which Trump asked Zelensky, the president of Ukraine, to investigate the Bidens, his political rivals, and a discredited theory about Ukraine as opposed to Russia having interfered with our elections. And it was pretty clear from that phone call that Trump was conditioning Zelensky starting those two investigations on the provision of military aid, which had been suspended. Military aid, by the way, which Congress had appropriated. Vindman was actually a firsthand witness to this phone call. He sat in on the phone call. He listened to the phone call. When he saw the summary that was prepared of that phone call, he actually noticed some things were left out. So he annotated it. And he was so disturbed by that phone call that he went to the lawyer Eisenberg to complain, saying, "This is not proper. This is really not kosher." And the Republicans on the committee on Tuesday tried to paint Vindman as someone who, even though he was a military person, didn't go through the chain of command, didn't complain to his immediate superior, but went right to the lawyer. And it turns out that Vindman's immediate superior also didn't go to his immediate superior. He went to the lawyer as well. Well, after Vindman complained twice about the impropriety in this July 25th phone call, Eisenberg, the lawyer, moved the record, the official record of that phone call, to a secret server so that only a few people would have access to it. This is an example of obstruction of justice. And of course, the July 25th phone call itself is abuse of power, which is a high crime and misdemeanor under the Constitution. Abuse of power was alleged against Nixon, but also bribery. It meets all the elements of bribery. And the Republicans on the committee were saying, well, none of these witnesses, these witnesses who have testified so far, even mentioned the word bribery. And Adam Schiff, who is the chairman of the committee, said, these are fact witnesses. These are not lawyers. It is not their job to characterize what they witnessed as bribery or anything else, any other legal conclusion.
So what do you make of the Republican strategy? I sort of started feeling a little bit embarrassed watching Devin Nunes early in the day just go through this lengthy list of questions that had clearly been written out for him that were simply intended to regurgitate Republican talking points, asking witnesses, you know, were you aware of this? Were you aware of, you know, this other detail or this conspiracy theory that's been heard on Fox News and nowhere else? And almost every single answer had to be no, or I only heard about it through these hearings, because most of these were completely irrelevant. It sort of felt like I almost felt sorry for Republicans. It was embarrassing.
It was embarrassing. And I believe it was Nunes who was pressing both of the witnesses to tell whether or not they had actually leaked anything to the press. And in other words, they're trying to figure out who the whistleblower is. And Schiff made it very clear that this was not going to be a proceeding to discover the identity of the whistleblower. But there were other Republican talking points. For example, the Republicans have been saying, well, this is all secondhand testimony. It's all hearsay. Both Vindman and the other witness, Jennifer Williams, I believe is her name, were firsthand recipient witnesses to this phone call on July 25th. They heard the phone call. It was no hearsay.
Right, because last week their defense was, well, you heard the second hand, you weren't really a witness to the phone call. So this week they had witnesses to the phone call. They seem to have dropped that line of questioning.
Right, exactly. And the other defense is, well, this is not quid pro quo, because even though Trump wanted these investigations in return for military aid, Zelensky and Ukraine never did initiate the investigations, and the military aid was turned over eventually anyway. Well, it turns out that the military aid, after being held up for 55 days, was released after the whistleblower came forward. And one of the, I think it was Nunes, who said that this was not really holding up military aid. It was a pause. The aid was paused for 55 days, as if you just hit a pause button. Again, one of the Republican talking points. But these witnesses were so they were so credible. And they didn't just give answers that the Democrats on the committee wanted. They were really straight shooters. They cut it down the middle. And I think that a combination of those witnesses and Schiff's summation really undercut these Republican talking points.
One of the talking points was whether Vindman had the authority to decide on his own that the phone call that he heard was inappropriate, and that that he saw Trump's request as a demand. This was an interesting point. Vindman said that when you have a power dynamic between, you know, people who have uneven power, in this case, Zelensky is clearly very dependent on U.S. military aid. So when Trump asked for a favor, that wasn't really a favor. It was really a demand. It was a request with a gun to your head sort of thing. And Vindman interpreted that as such, as anybody would. Adam Schiff had interpreted it as such when he had sort of paraphrased Trump's phone call as a mafia don making a request. But Republicans basically seem to completely toss that out, saying, no, it was just him requesting because Zelensky said he didn't feel pressured at all. How do you respond to that?
Well, that's interesting. If you look at the global picture and the other witnesses who have testified and the emails that were sent and the meetings that took place, and there was a meeting in Bolton's office that Vindman testified to, the July 10th meeting, all of those things corroborate Vindman's conclusion that this was not just a favor Trump was asking Zelensky for, it was a demand. In Bolton's office on July the 10th, Sondland, Ambassador Sondland, who is a Wednesday witness, said that in order to get a White House meeting, and Zelensky, who was newly elected as the president, really wanted a meeting with Trump. This was very important to his legitimacy as the new leader of Ukraine and acting in Ukraine's interest vis-a-vis the United States. And so Sondland said in this meeting in Bolton's office on the 10th of July that in order to get a White House meeting, Ukraine would have to provide the deliverable. And the deliverable was mounting these specific investigations against the Biden, Trump's political rival, and this discredited theory about who was meddling in the U.S. elections. And so John Bolton abruptly ended this meeting. John Bolton, whom I always saw as kind of a loose cannon, a crazy guy, was really kind of the voice of reason in this whole thing, one of the voices of reason. And so there was another meeting after the meeting in Sondland's office, in Bolton's office that day, where Sondland said that there was an agreement with Mick Mulvaney, Trump's chief of staff, that Trump would get his investigations in return for Ukraine. Ukraine would get its meeting in return for mounting these investigations. And then more corroborating evidence that this was not just a favor that Trump was asking Zelensky for in the July 25th phone call, but in fact a demand, was earlier in the week, last week, Ambassador Taylor testified about an unnamed person, an embassy staffer in Kiev, who overheard a phone call between Sondland and Trump. And so on Friday night, in a closed-door session, the committee heard testimony from David Holmes. And he said that the day after the July 25th phone call, in other words, on July 26th, Holmes overheard a phone call between Sondland and Trump. And Trump was talking so loudly that Holmes could hear what he was saying. And in this phone call that Holmes overheard, he actually heard Donald Trump. This is another firsthand witness, not a hearsay secondhand witness, but a firsthand witness. Donald Trump pressed Ambassador Sondland about whether Zelensky was going to mount these investigations. And Sondland told Trump, Zelensky's going to do it. And then Sondland said, and this was after he hung up with Trump, Trump doesn't care about Ukraine. He's primarily interested in investigations. So it's not just Vindman's testimony and his interpretation of that July 25th phone call and whether Trump was demanding that Zelensky mount the investigations as opposed to asking a favor. That was corroborated. Vindman's interpretation of that July 25th phone call has been corroborated over and over again by witnesses who have testified and presumably witnesses who have still to testify.
One of the asides on this, and I'm not sure if it came up in the hearing, is that CNN's Fareed Zakariyyeh wrote in the New York Times just a few days ago about how he had been negotiating with President Zelensky to have an interview with him, during which he expected Zelensky was going to announce those investigations. Then the whistleblower complaint happened, the aid was released to Ukraine, and the interview was canceled. So, you know, they were basically going to give in to Trump's demand, at least as far as Zakariyyeh is claiming. Let's talk about Sondland, who's expected to testify Wednesday. He's an interesting case because he is, of course, part of the Trump orbit. He is a hotelier, former hotelier, who is now the U.S., like Trump, into real estate. And he is now the U.S. ambassador to the European Union. He first testified sort of in Trump's favor, then came back and changed, revised his closed-door testimony when he sort of remembered some additional details. Do you think that Sondland is going to get thrown under the bus by Trump?
Trump will throw anyone under the bus whom he perceives as acting acting contrary to Trump's interests. I think that goes for everybody except his family members. He will throw anybody under the bus, and I think he will throw Sondland under the bus. And Sondland, as I said, was right in the middle of this, and that was clear from Vindman's testimony about that July 10th meeting in Bolton's office. So I think Sondland's testimony is going to be extremely interesting. He's under oath. He could be charged with perjury. He's already been caught in inconsistencies or lies, you might say, in his testimony. So that's going to be very, very interesting what Sondland has to say, which way he cuts. And the other thing to keep in mind, and you're talking about Trump throwing people under the bus, Trump has been intimidating witnesses in real time. For example, Marie Yovanovitch was testifying, and as she was testifying, Trump was tweeting, Marie Yovanovitch is bad news. Everything she touches, look at everything she touches. And he talked about, Ukraine. He talked about, Somalia. And so Adam Schiff put that tweet up on the board during Yovanovitch's testimony, and she said she felt very intimidated. And it's my strong feeling that that is evidence of witness tampering, which it could be the basis for an article of impeachment for obstruction of justice.
I'm wondering if the Republican strategy on Wednesday when Sondland testifies, how it's going to be, because of course they, Republicans and Trump, have characterized many of these witnesses, many of whom are Republican and or conservative, as never Trumpers, as being motivated by partisan politics. Here's Sondland, who's clearly part of Trump's team, who is basically going to have to choose between loyalty to Trump and perjuring himself under oath. And it's going to be really interesting to see how Republicans, how aggressively they question him, and what they say, whether they bring up those conspiracy theories they've been raising. What about, Marjorie, what about this other thing that has come up during this week's hearings about Trump's written testimony to the special counsel in that other investigation that many had hoped would show Trump as, obstructing justice and being caught, engaging in misconduct. Now it turns out Trump might have lied to Mueller. First of all, is that a potential extra article of impeachment? And second of all, if that's true, why did Mueller not speak up about this? Why did he keep quiet about Trump's potential perjury?
Well, Bill Clinton was impeached for lying to a grand jury under oath. That was really the guts of the impeachment against Bill Clinton. Of course, he was not removed by the Senate, but he was impeached. An impeachment is an indictment, and this there will be an impeachment against Trump. The question is, what will the articles of impeachment be? And then it will move to the Senate. And he will likely be acquitted. But meanwhile, people are watching these hearings in real time with these very, very respectable witnesses who are very credible. And so the committee is not just making the case to the House of Representatives, but also to the American public as well. So yes, that certainly could be an article of impeachment, lying to Mueller under oath. And he, even though he answered questions in writing, Trump answered questions in writing, it was under oath. And I believe it was Ambassador Taylor's testimony that revealed information. There was not a lot of detail released about it, but information that led some of these committee members to think that, other Democrats to think that there may be evidence that Trump did commit perjury. Now, another interesting thing in all of this is that Robert Mueller, as we know, did not make a conclusion that Trump obstructed justice in vis-a-vis the Russia investigation. But he laid out 10 different instances that could 10 different instances of Trump's behavior that could constitute obstruction of justice. And then Mueller said that because the Department of Justice's Office of Legal Counsel has a memo saying that sitting president can't be indicted, I can't really conclude on whether he committed obstruction of justice, but that is under the Constitution for Congress to pursue. And what Mueller was saying is basically throwing the ball to Congress for impeachment. Another thing that has to do with the Mueller investigation and also overlaps with the Ukraine investigation is that Don McGahn, the White House counsel, probably the most significant witness to Trump's obstruction of justice in the Mueller investigation, was subpoenaed to testify and defied that subpoena. And the House of Representatives sued McGahn, and that is going up through the courts to determine whether or not it's basically a conflict, a separation of powers conflict between Congress, the legislative branch, issuing a subpoena, a lawful subpoena, for a witness to testify, that is Don McGahn, about the Mueller investigation, about the Russia, about what Trump did, and the president saying, "I'm the president," and touting this theory of absolute immunity, that I am telling witnesses not to testify and they will have absolute immunity from any criminal or civil liability. Well, first of all, there's no such thing as absolute immunity. It is a creation of the Office of Legal Counsel. No court or statute or constitution has ever upheld that. And so as that case wends its way up, I'm sure, to the Supreme Court, Kupperman, who was John Bolton's right-hand man, also defied a subpoena to testify in the Ukraine investigation, and he sued the House of Representatives, saying, "Please tell me who I have to obey, the executive or the legislative branch." So the House of Representatives, the committee mounting the impeachment inquiry, said to Kupperman, "Your lawsuit is going to delay these proceedings. We are withdrawing the subpoena from Kupperman, so please dismiss your lawsuit." Well, Kupperman hasn't dismissed his lawsuit, but I have no doubt that a court will say, once it does reach any court, that Kupperman's lawsuit is moot. Moot because the subpoena has been withdrawn.
There's some suggestion that the judge is dragging his feet to benefit Trump.
No, this is not a judge dragging his feet. The judge, I suppose the judge could say, that this is moot, but it has not, no decision has been made because this is fairly recent. And Kupperman has not withdrawn his lawsuit. And there is also reporting that John Bolton, who has been subpoenaed to testify and who did not obey that subpoena, is going to see what happens in the Kupperman lawsuit. And decide whether to testify based on that. But there are some witnesses who have actually refused to testify following Trump's orders. There are a lot of them we see who have testified in spite of Trump's orders, because that's who we're talking about, the witnesses who have testified. But there are some who have not testified, including Eisenberg, the lawyer who took that record of the July 25th call and put it on a secret server. And I see that as obstruction of justice. People might be interested in knowing what articles of impeachment could be brought so far in the Ukraine investigation. And I think the July 25th phone call is evidence of bribery. I don't think there's any question about that. And in fact, Nancy Pelosi, Adam Schiff, the Democrats are talking about bribery, and it doesn't just have to be bribery under the federal bribery statute. There was no bribery statute at the time of the founding fathers wrote the Constitution. But under the federal bribery statute, it makes it a crime for a public official to corruptly, that means he has a corrupt intent, to demand, seek, receive, accept, or agree to receive or accept anything of value. That would be the investigations that Trump wanted in exchange for being influenced in the performance of official acts, unfreezing the military aid. But it is not necessary that the quid pro quo be successful. The crime is the corrupt deal or demand itself, and the offer to exercise power of the public office in exchange for personal benefit. So
just an attempt at quid pro quo is enough.
Yes, an attempt is enough for bribery. So, and
Yeah.
bribery is mentioned specifically. Bribery and treason are the only two crimes that are specifically mentioned in the Constitution as grounds for impeachment. And then it also mentions high crimes and misdemeanors. Obstruction of justice is a high crime and misdemeanor. So is abuse of power. And we saw that in the Nixon impeachment, abuse of power, obstruction of justice, and in the Clinton impeachment, obstruction of justice. So the July 25th phone call could be charged. What Trump did in that phone call could be charged under an article of impeachment for bribery and for abuse of power, that Trump was abusing his power by conditioning military aid that Congress had appropriated in return for a political favor, mounting these investigations of his political rival. And then his attempt to cover it up by hiding the call on a secret server is also evidence of obstruction of justice. Trump's efforts to prevent witnesses from testifying with this absolute immunity theory is also obstruction of the impeachment inquiry. One of the articles of impeachment against Nixon was contempt of Congress. And that could be, they could call it contempt of Congress, they could call it obstruction of the impeachment inquiry. And then Trump's ouster of Yovanovitch, because she was really trying to fight corruption and Trump was trying to promote corruption in Ukraine, through Rudy Giuliani and Parnas and Fruman, his two right-hand men, constitutes abuse of power. And then Trump tweeting insults against Yovanovitch in real time as she testifies could be another article of impeachment for obstruction of justice. And this is just so far, Sonali. We still have heard from all of the witnesses. So it's piling up, and we're just talking now about Ukraine. We're not talking at all about the Mueller investigation, which could also be included in articles of impeachment, although it seems to me that Nancy Pelosi wants to narrow the focus, the scope, because it's so clear and so easy to understand. And that's what these hearings are focusing on, is the Ukraine scandal.
Well, Marjorie, so much to talk about and observe, and I really appreciate your analysis. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Marjorie Cohen. She's a professor emerita at the Thomas Jefferson School of Law. She's also a writer for Truth Out. We've been discussing the public impeachment hearings in their second week now. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter, subscribe to our video channel on Vimeo, and find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify.